This excerpt that we're playing is from a documentary that came out last fall. No, the fall of 2014. And I went to California and saw the documentary. It's about Zappa's visit to Italy in 1982. He's doing his tour in Europe. They end up in Sicily, and Gail and the kid, no, Frank, he visits his hometown. I wonder if they even played in his home, where his aunts, his parents and grandparents came from in Sicily. So, okay, what they do is they show the concert that Zappa gives. And this place had never, might have been Palermo. I don't know if it's the actual place where his ancestors came from, or it was nearby, but they had to.
It is, the interview is presented in the Biennale de Venice.
Right. No, I'm giving the background. In 1982, Zappa performed in this Sicilian place, I think Palermo, on Bastille Day or some national holiday for Italy. I don't know. I guess it wouldn't be Bastille unless they were part of that effect in Paris. But anyway, it's this big holiday. Unfortunately, the mafia were being prosecuted at that point. Mae Brussels would be doing lots of... Mae Brussels and LaRouche did a lot of investigative replay and in-depth of this stuff on the recordings, which I was listening to in 82. So there was a lot about the mafia. So the main investigator got blown up. So there's a lot of explosions going off on that day. And so the stadium authorities did not know how to put on a rock concert, so they put Zappa in a stage, but they wouldn't let the audience be near it. So the audience is sitting in this like soccer stadium thing half a mile away from the stage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Zappa and them are projecting in a very far away situation. So in the middle of the concert, or quite early into it, it may be, a war broke out between, I don't know, factions, between the police and the mafia.
Did they riot?
And there was a riot. And you will see a painting of it on the cover of the 1982 album, Man from Utopia, which shows Zappa on stage swatting flies while tear gas canisters are being thrown at him and the band, and it shows a painting of a riot. So this total chaos breaks out, and it's all videotaped. So that happened in 1982. So like 30 years later, Gail and her daughter Moon Unit and Diva and Dweezil, and Dweezil's girlfriend or wife, they go to this small town. They go because somebody came up. The guy that made the documentary was going to that concert back in 1982 with his father. And I think he arrived late or something. And maybe he didn't even get to it. So 30 years later, he decides to make a documentary about Zappa, focusing on this concert that he didn't get to. And so he got footage of it from Gail. So Gail and her kids go to this Palermo scene 30 years later with the documentary maker to meet Zappa's relatives. There was still a Zappa family there. So they have this family reunion of people who never saw each other ever before, as well as they go and look at the little rickety little hole in the wall that was the home that Zappa's parents or grandparents came from. And so it's a pretty interesting, moving documentary that came out in the fall of 82. Of course, I was with Gail watching that, and her friend Massimo, who was an Italian journalist, a longtime buddy of Frank's out of Italy. And Massimo was like the host, for the mediator for this. So I'm sitting with them watching the documentary, but I was with them the night before when we went to another documentary on Jaco, the famous bass player. What's his name? Jaco Pastorius or something? Pastorius?
Yeah, I know the Jaco or whatever. I've heard that, but I don't know any of
that. So I spent 2 days with Gail, in October 6th and 7th, and then exactly a year later, October 7th, 2015, she transitioned. So,
that's the
yes,
malediction
of the Open L virus. And so what we're going to watch here is an excerpt of an interview with the director who made the documentary, and this interview was done a year or two ago, I guess, and put into the documentary. So Gail is going to talk about Frank in general, and that's the part that Roxy wanted to hear. So I hope this documentary gets released. It's really good, very interesting to watch. And it's funny watching the band members, including Massimo. Massimo, who's here being interviewed, the guy, the bald guy, he was featured in this concert in the summer of 82, and he got to perform his poetry or rant or something, but he was there directly getting affected by the tear gas. And the band ran off to some place, some part of the bunker, and I think they got trapped, sort of, and then they had to get taken out of that. So it was pretty tense for them after a while. So let's see where we can get Gail talking about this. I'll just take it back a bit. So any questions about it? It's clear, right?
Yeah, that was a good context. I'm ready to hear it.
Okay, right. Now I'm going to jump around to get Gail's beginning.
This idea of being an immigrant and traveling to who knows where for God knows what reason.
I'm going to go back a bit.
But the amazing thing, it affected Dweezil so deeply, this idea of being an immigrant and traveling to who knows where for God knows what reason. And I think that part, being right for Frank, being an immigrant, the son of an immigrant, was a huge influence on his music, because he often said his job was to go out there and come back and tell you what he saw. And that's his life. You know, that's the story of an immigrant. They go somewhere else, and then they find out, oh, this is different. Or maybe it's the same, but the differences are just cultural, and it just adds to the story. But definitely for Frank, I think he was the ultimate immigrant in the sense that he went out there and came back and told us what was out there.
E volevo chiedere un'ultima domanda. Massimo Bassoli, questo film riunisce due parti importanti della sua vita, Frank Zappa e l'Italia, che è il suo paese. E che cosa ha rappresentato per lei?
Il film ha rappresentato moltissimo, ha rappresentato questo film il coronamento di una parte importantissima della mia vita, perché l'amicizia con Frank è stata fondamentale per me, ha insegnato tanto, tutto quello che so della musica, della comunicazione, e rifare questo percorso, rifare la stessa esperienza con la sua famiglia, prima con i figli, poi con gli altri, con la moglie e tutti quanti, è stato catartico per me.
Bene, vi ringrazio.
Grazie a te.
Grazie.
Grazie anche per la puntata. Okay, so at the end of the interview. So that we got to hear the main point that Roxy was interested, but I got to get rid of this echo. So. Okay, there it is. So the that was Gail talking about Frank traveling. I remember reading a review in 1970 in like Crawdaddy magazine. Some journalist said that every tribe had young people who would go out. The ones on a vision quest, say, or on some kind of mission, they would go out and travel around and find neat experiences, and then come back and report to the tribe what they did. This journalist said that Frank was like that. Very interesting. It's my fantastic memory of all things Frank, that I remember that idea. This guy talking about certain people, kids in a generation, have to go out on some search to find some. Way back there. Sometimes Gail is good for her anecdotes of what was said and thought in the Zappa world, in the Zappa family, way back in the late 60s, early 70s. She seems to remember that stuff.
In a wider sense, we are all like that because we were thrown out of paradise, of Garden of Eden.
Right. Talk a little louder. Make it a little louder. We were thrown out of paradise. Yeah.
Yes, and we, like Kion said, are trying to come back to God. So, in a way, we're all in this mythical trip.
Yeah.
Going out and reporting the experience of the fallen man.
Looking for
trying to get back to God.
Yeah, well, everybody went out, and then they got lost, and they couldn't find their way back home, is Zion's thesis. They didn't get back.
Yeah, so that is why this archetype somehow is universal and reaches everybody.
Right.
Everybody can identify with that.
Well, it seems most communication is people who didn't get back home who tell what they found out as they explored the weird and the unfamiliar and then develop theories or ideas about what they saw but don't know if it's real because they didn't get back home to compare it to. So all of our culture is mortar, is incomplete. And those that do get back home don't tell anybody. They keep it to themselves. So
yeah,
everybody,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, everybody is making up their version of what they thought they saw. And then Ayn shows up millions of years later. Millions. Took a million more years for Ayn to show up. And he shows up and he tells us, well, this is what you actually did, and this is who did get out there and did report back home and did tell you and got back home. That's what Ayn's doing. He's telling us which reports are accurate or what the writer meant but didn't know any better, so Ayn's translating it. You get that in the Revelation. So now, in McLuhan's... Yeah, go ahead.
The philosopher Michel Serre talks about the troubadour.
Does he?
Because he says all philosophers, all mystics, all artists are actually doing that. They're being troubadours, and the word troubadour is from the Languedoc, because there were two languages in France, the Languedoc in the Occitan, the Basque part, and Languedules is the French we know, the French from Frank the First. Frank I made it official that they were going to talk the French language. No, not Languedoc. But the troubadours spoke Languedoc. And the main one was Richard Lionheart, because many troubadours were not just musicians. They were actually nobility, kings and barons and very well-educated people. And troubadour comes from the Languedoc, and it means, the verb means to find, trouver. And, many people think the troubadours were only thinking about love and romance, but actually they were in a quest of finding things and going around reporting their findings. And this is what Frank is doing and Bob is doing with his art and Joyce and everybody.
All the good guys. Yeah. All the good guys and gals are doing that.
Yes.
And Richard the Lionheart, he lived from 1157 to 1199. And they say he was king of England from 1189 until his death. So only 10 years. But he ruled as Duke of Normandy.
He was only 42 when he died? Wow.
Yeah. Duke of Aquitaine. Remember, 100 years ago, you know what the average lifespan of a male? I don't know if it was the whole world or just the West or just North America. It was 47. 100 years ago. Humans were expected not to get past their 40s. Interesting
yeah,
fact, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Duke of Aquitaine, Duke of Gascony, Lord of Cyprus, Count of Poitiers, Count of Anjou, Count of Maine, Count of Nantes, and Overlord of Brittany at various times during the same period. He was the third of five sons of King Henry II of England. King Henry II of England was really important. He, the date in Finnegan's Wake, 1132, may have something to do with Henry II, because his career, if you look in the wiki, he's 1133 to 1189 is his life. So he's born a year after the date of of Finnegan's Wake, the repeating date, and he's the one that sort of started to conquer Ireland. He's the one who grabbed Ireland. So he's an important character, Henry II, in this period. And let's see. His son is Richard the Lionheart, Lionhearted. Now, Richard the Lionhearted, he marries... No, his mother is Eleanor of Aquitaine, and that's Henry II of England marrying Eleanor of Aquitaine. That gets you into the House of Navarre, the Basque, this whole southern France English connection, right, Roxy? That's the beginning of it, it seems.
This, at the time, it was the same kingdom.
Same kingdom, yeah. Aquitaine and Navarre and Basque, all the same?
And England.
And England. Oh, yeah, yeah. England was part of it. It was England territory or Basque territory. So they say Richard the Lionheart, because of his reputation, he had the name the Lionheart because he was a great military leader and warrior. He was also known in Occitan, that means the language, as yes and no because of his reputation for terseness.
Huh.
Remember, Ian said today, many hours ago, that when Bob gets mad, he becomes terse. Or Ian said that when Bob's mad, they're forced to be terse. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was the word terse.
You get the lion heart.
What? What?
You get the lion heart.
I got the lion heart. He brings that up. I never heard him describe me as terse or bring that up. But he did it today because he knew this was being said, 5 hours later. So that's a good example of Ian's overview of the composition that's unfolding. So you're saying that Richard the Lionheart was a troubadour? Here he's this great military leader. How did he have time to do that?
Yes. Actually, the most famous troubadours were mostly kings and royalty and warriors.
When did they do this?
They were educated, and actually, Eleanor d'Aquitaine was a great civilizer.
Civilizer?
She thought the women in the court civilized men, because otherwise men would be just like barbarians.
Right.
Fighting wars educated.
You know when the phrase pop art came up in the 60s, McLuhan commented on that. He said, this is very strange to bring in dead or pop into the art world. He says the art world always was run by the women, in education and teaching and whatever else they organized in the course. And so it should be mom art, but to call it pop art was a whole new aberration in the history of culture. Now, you've never heard this idea ever said before, what I'm saying, right? But it's historically sound that it was odd to bring dad into the art world. But that's what pop art is. It's the men taking over. They already, dominated art, but they took over the media dynamics of the Android meme. In a way, okay.
The thinking.
Because they were obsolete. Because the satellite environment was making everybody go right hemisphere, which in the myth of right and left hemisphere, the women are right hemisphere, and the media would favor women taking over media images in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So the last gasp of men in art, men, the patriarchal part of art, as the artist, as explorer, whereas the women would traditionally introduce the artist to a court or some place or to a classroom. So they were the museum keepers. But the actual artist had its supernova of male domination of art in the 60s with the term pop art. But that's an example of how McLuhan would take the word pop and then make a bunch of puns and multi-levels out of it. Right?
Fun.
Pop art. Daddy
yeah.
art. What?
I said riffing. It's improvising.
Yes, yes. So Eleanor of Aquitaine seems to be an archetype of one of the original, in Western civilization, one of the original culture vultures, right? You're saying that we've got to bring culture in to civilize and these barbarian men we live with. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, they made it like a big deal to propagate Christianity. That's the time of the Crusades.
Yes.
And they had like they developed like a code of
behavior,
of being behavior,
yeah.
And also the ideals that they should be fighting for. They thought they had to get the holy land back.
And you know they were looking for the holy
Christian
grail.
Bodies.
And they were actually looking for artifacts. That's the whole point.
For relics and
right, and
the stone. And
yeah, the white stone. They were over there. I used to interview the Evergreens about this. What the real Holy Grail was, what this was, what that was. And when we first talked to Ian presented all kinds of these artifacts in cultures all over the world. Very magical. I don't know, transformative or catalyst. So. That's a part of the Crusades that is not... It is today, maybe, because he had the counterculture for 40 years, but most of the last 200 years, nobody talked about the Crusades as looking for mystical artifacts. It was to preserve Christianity against Islam. So, Richard the Lion...
One of the big ideas of Christianity is love. But that's why many people think the troubadours were only singing romantic love.
Right.
But they had a higher understanding of this concept of love.
That's
because
right.
It was nearer to the word agape.
Agape, A-G-A-P-E, yes. LaRouche uses that word a lot. Agape is like higher wisdom. Higher compassion, higher something. Now this, Alyssa and Nate, brings us exactly to Frank Zappa in a way that's amazing. You have all these baby boomers, and Zappa is a little earlier, just before the baby boomers. That's generally regarded 1946, and Zappa's 1940, but he's part of that generation and entertaining them. He's the only guy in the love generation, because these rock bands were talking about love, tribal love or sentimental love or some kind of spiritual value. I remember McLuhan one night saying, all rock is the new form of spirituality. He said, all the rock bands present themselves with some kind of spiritual key or wisdom. But Zappa was the only one who refused to sing about love and said, love should be a given. It's not something you sing about. Everybody has it. It's not a big deal. So he actually was following, according to what Roxy just said, the higher ideal of love, not the conventional idea of love.
Yeah, he was a real troubadour. He
yeah.
understood that it's not about the romantic love.
Right.
But the love, like some philosophers understood that, some mystics, is... it's only like engagement with other people to make a type of recognition that recognizes like your higher aspects, like I might say the God in you.
Right. Now, you know, because, the higher aspects are ring 8 or 9 in the angel chart. I think it's ring 9 where Job is an example. You know, Job had this great tolerance and patience. And developing the higher emotions is laid out there in ring 9. And that's what we're talking about, the higher emotions. So what do you think of this, Alyssa? You got Frank Zappa. There was the TV environment retrieved medieval culture because it had the tactile values, pre-literate values coming out of its content, the mosaic screen of the television. So it retrieved tactility. So there was a lot of retrieval of medieval images like the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit books. There were a lot of popular fantasies of going back to the pre-Raphaelite, pre-Raphael part, pre-Leonardo da Vinci. Now, LaRouche hated that, and LaRouche spends a lot of time dismissing the oligarchic uses, misuses of that medieval retrieval. But here in the middle of the medieval retrieval is Zappa contradicting the cliches of the Beatles. Beatles are, all you need is love, all you need is love. Frank says, no, we don't need any love. It's essentially what he said. He considered love is already there. And this Ayn says this, you don't need to go into love. You don't need to go into the fact you're ascended. That's a given because you're eternal regardless. They're never going to get out of your eternity. So you already have a great factor for the joy of living, or the joy of being...
You got a good base going.
Yeah, you got a good base going already in your being. It's the improvisation beyond that which leads to a concept of agape. So it's pretty neat that we can bring in what Zappa actually said. Remember Jerry Fialka, he had this rare interview where he quotes Frank saying he's not interested in love and this and that. And he said, wow, you know what that is, Bob? Why would Frank say that? So I remember explaining it to him. And I was just like Roxanna's great-great aunt, who when she was 3 years old could explain the Bible and make people cry. And in her ideas that she said, I did the same thing to Jerry Fialka. He cried when I explained what Frank meant by not being interested in love. So, and you know, when Gail would talk about Frank, she would talk about how, warm the guy was, how nice the guy was, whatever those human sentiments. And that was true. But one didn't get that image often in the media for what Frank was. So he had that mystical softness in him as a person. And Gail would mention it. No one else ever talked about it, but she could. So there's the beginning. Frank as the real troubadour aspects, as opposed to anybody else of his generation. So that's what you're saying, Roxy. Frank was a troubadour.
Well, like Michel Serres says, all philosophers, all artists, all mystics are actually...
No, you got to speak louder. I want to hear it. First of all, I want to spell his name. This is Michael Serres.
Yes. I say all philosophers, all artists, all mystics are doing what the troubadours did. They go out and explore, and then they come back and share what they found.
Now, that is...
And it's in this dialogue
That's what? Style?
The dialogue,
yeah.
The communication, their singing, or their declamation of their poetry is what... is how they share, how they loved...
Right.
The recognition they had for the audience was by sharing these creations. Like,
now this is Michael Serres, Serres. You can see an essay by him, an essay on him by Arthur Coker in the book The Postmodern Scene, came out about 1986. So Michael Serres, the famous French thinker, And he's saying that all art is the troubadour archetype. That's what you're saying.
Yes, because it's an aspiration to homily, to the coitus of communication.
Yeah. The coitus.
A recognition we need, because we're aware of ourselves and of our environment, but we need to talk about this awareness, what we are and what we experience.
Does Michael Sayers bring up the idea of the other in his essay that you read or looked at? Is he to,
yes, because that's the highest type of love is this type of communication.
With the other, which is exactly what I told you the other day. And I said it
again.
Tell
me more about that, you guys. I don't have any context to that.
Right. The other is a major concept taught in the humanities or in postmodern cultural studies, whatever you call universities today, and you're not in the engineering class, you're a non-engineer, you will hear about the postmodern, it seems to be a postmodern idea, I don't know who started it, but somebody came up with the idea of the other, which maybe it was Lacan, a post-Freudian.
I think the existentialist already talked a lot about
the okay. The other. Now, I told Rosh the other day that to grow, to ascend, you have to look at what Gurdjieff called your chief feature. There's something about yourself that is your core self-image of confidence or knowing. Okay, you have this image of, okay, I'm like Nate and Alyssa say, we're musicians. We can sing. We're artistic people. That would be a core image of yourself. Well, there's going to be the opposite of yourself, which is called the other, and the other will eventually confront you. What would be the opposite of a musician? A chartered accountant, a great accountant, monstrous accountant will show up and challenge you to in your musicalness, and that's the other.
That is the metaphor of Ulysses going back to Ithaca. Encounters all these monsters.
Yes, yeah. In Tibetan, it's your bardo. So, because little man believes in good and bad, and hurt, pain, and pleasure, this dialectic, he's always siding one side and afraid of the other side, and the other side will always catch up to you. In the end, if you have a good long life, you're going to have to confront your opposite. So I was telling Roxy this, and I was telling someone else today, you've got to become your opposite. You've got to engage your opposite. You've got to put on the opposite of what you think you are. And that's part of the journey for the little man. You know, the ascended person doesn't have to do that. But the ascended person doesn't have another, I would say. They know the other and have merged with it.
They are the other.
Yes.
And
that's emerging. It's a a psychoanalytical concept, maybe, of ascension. Heaven and hell, or heaven and earth merging, the opposites. So, the ebb and flow and the dialectic of the opposites is the core aspect of consciousness, of being human being, if you're a little man. So, Troubadour would go out and confront the other. May not know it at first, but that's what they were doing. Right. It's like a hypnotism. You're going to have to deal with the other because it's waiting for you to notice it and then engage it in some emotional level and then usually have a battle. So the postmodern started saying that, woman is the other for man is the other for woman. The gays are the other for heterosexuals. Maybe the bisexual is the other for the gay person, one who's just a homosexual lesbian. The child, the one who believes in pederasty is the other for heterosexual people. So any opposites, like African American is the other to the Caucasian in American culture, right? So sure. It's a pretty simple idea. but nobody knows about it as the other. Like, you've never heard this idea said to you with the word other. That was new to you. You didn't have that kind of education. It's very common in university education.
Yeah, I never went to college. I didn't need it.
Right. So you don't know that word. Now you do. Now you're educated. Now you can get a degree. You know, that's all you have to know is about the other. That's
consider me educated.
Oh, you're educated all over, on all modern ways.
I'm fucking street smart as shit.
That's right, and you know a lot about music and a lot of other things as you travel, but the sheltered suburbanite who goes to college and then just drinks beer or does porno movies while they're in college and tries to make friends, that sheltered person...